Hey guys, it's Jared here. Just wanted to give you guys a quick heads up before we started today's podcast. There's only a few days left in the month of May, but it's Military Appreciation Month right now at Carl Chevrolet in Ankeny and Carl Chevrolet Stewart. Any active or retired military members, spouses, or same household members can qualify for supplier pricing plus $500 off. And that's exclusively at Carl Chevrolet and above and beyond even what GM is doing right now. They also have $2,000 off purchase and $1,000 off a lease of a new Chevy Blazer. This is the first time they have had any incentive from GM on that specific vehicle. So this is a perfect time to get in and get a brand new Chevy Blazer right now if you're in the market for that. They also have $2,750 off a new Traverse, and GM just added an additional Memorial Day incentive of $1,000 off. Plus, exclusively at Carl Chevrolet, they have an additional $1,000 trade assist if you purchase a new Traverse and trade in any Traverse or GMC Acadia model. So you can check all of those deals out right now through the last week here of the month of May at Carl Chevrolet of Ankeny, exit 90 at The Rock, or Carl Chevrolet of Stewart, you know, out just west of West Des Moines. I also want to give you guys a heads up, too, about our Cyclone Fanatic store. Right now here through the next month or so, for a limited time, you can buy our Net Collector shirts that honor the, you know, the five Big 12 tournament championships Iowa State has won. We added those right after the most recent one. You can get that right now for $10, as well as the classic Our Linebacker Throws Better Than Your Quarterback shirt in honor of the great Joel Lanning. You can get that one for $10 as well. That's 50% off two of our most popular shirts that we've ever done on the Cyclone Fanatic store. You can get those right now at teamcloset.com/CycloneFanatic/shop/home. And then one last thing. If you enjoy our free content here at CycloneFanatic.com or on the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast Network, we really ask that you would please consider donating to our Patreon fund monthly. It's really easy. It's really secure, and then all the money that you give goes straight back to Cyclone Fanatic into making our product better. For example, this summer we're releasing the new Cyclone Fanatic app that's being paid for 100% with funds from the CF Patreon account. I just got an update last week of what the app looks like. I can promise you it's awesome. It's going to be something I think that a lot of people are really going to like, and we're going to add even more stuff here in the coming months, just more and more things to keep making our content better and better. You can click on Become a Patron link on the right side of the homepage to help support your favorite Cyclone website. So please consider doing that and supporting our monthly Patreon here at Cyclone Fanatic. Just wanted to give you guys all of that information before we start today's podcast. Now, another episode of Football and Random Things. Welcome to another edition of the Cyclone Fanatic podcast. I don't know what episode of Football and Random Things this is. It's been a really long time since we've recorded one.
It has been a while.
Gonna have to look this up before I post it.
207.
I don't think it feels like that.
Every day with you feels like 4 years, Jared. Every day.
Man, if we counted all the episodes of like CFTV that we did, we probably are pretty close to.
We've got to be
200
right.
Something.
I don't know if it'd be in 200.
We've done more than 100 at least.
Yeah, I bet we were in the 100 plus.
Yeah. Jeff, you're walking around like a bow-legged dog today.
Even though I'm super knock-kneed,
yeah.
Fun fact about my knee anatomy. Shout out to all my knock-kneed brothers out there.
It's just what we needed to know today.
Yep. When have I ever been, like, conservative with my ridiculous, unnecessary facts?
Never.
At what point
Never.
Have you been like, you know what? I'm really surprised Jeff didn't share something that really didn't need to be said. But no, as with many, many people did Murph yesterday. And I think it was funny because so CrossFit has been doing Murph for, I think 2006, 2007 was the first year they did it. It was named after Lieutenant Michael Murphy. And it's like, yesterday was obviously Memorial Day. And so for those that don't know what Murph is, it's CrossFit has been doing this for a while. They call them Hero Wads, which WOD workout of the day. So Hero named after a fallen soldier. So Hero Wads, doing something that either they would have done or named after kind of in their remembrance. And every Memorial Day for, 15 years now or whatever it is, CrossFit's been doing that. And this year, I think it's kind of cool, but also kind of funny. We're like there's something called the Murph Challenge mm-hmm. that went around on social media. And all of us in the CrossFit world were like, guys, we've been doing this for 10 years. Welcome to the party. No, but the cool part about it, so we did it, and for those who don't know what it is, it's you run a mile, you do 100 pull-ups, 200 push-ups, 300 air squats, and then you run another mile. And you do that not necessarily as fast as you can, because it's not, the point isn't sprint the whole thing. the point is you're like, you're doing it to kind of remember slash honor like a fallen soldier. And I don't know, I don't really necessarily talk about it that much on air just because it's meant to be, you know, this is, I think it's super good work, but it's meant to be something like fun, just talking. But yesterday I'm on the board of a nonprofit called ValorFit, which places veterans in gyms to kind of give them strength back, because a disabled or discharged veteran a lot of times goes from being really good at something and being really strong, from being in shape, you're fit, you're with your brothers, you're doing something that you know you're meant to do and you're really good at it, and then you get discharged, whether it's by TBI or some injury, and you're no longer able to do the one thing you're good at, and so you don't know what you're supposed to do, and you that becomes isolated, they become isolated, they stop working out, they stop becoming part of a community, and so physically they get weaker, mentally they get weaker, and they kind of get forgotten about. And so what ValorFit does is it takes those veterans and kind of once, whether they're nominated for or they raise their hand themselves, we place them in a gym. And we're right now focusing more on CrossFit gyms, but that's not exclusive, to get someone involved in a space where if you don't show up in any given day, you get five texts that goes, "Hey dude, where were you?" Because the question of how are you doing and genuinely meaning it is one of the most important things that anybody can ask or can hear. And, on the back end of that, we try and work with them to make sure they know what's going on with their health and they're actually taking a part of being part of a community again, making them stronger, making them feel physically confident, which kind of leads to mental confidence. And so ValorFit has placed over 220 veterans in gyms, and we did our first community Murph. We kind of, all the gyms in the area got together and we did it at Ignite Fitness in Grimes. And we had, I think, almost 400 people show up, and I think we raised $20,000, which is good enough for I believe 180 veterans to get gym memberships for an entire year, which we'd pay for at least the first few months until they feel like they're ready to get it on their own. So I did that at our event yesterday. And if you're wondering how I feel, like you said, I was walking like a bow-legged dog. I feel like I got hit by a bus. So yes, it's not really the best advertisement for doing Murph that feel like you get hit by a bus, but you kind of do that. You do something like that on Memorial Day because it actually benefits something. Yeah. It's not just a thoughts and prayers situation where it's like, I'm thinking about veterans. Thanks. Good job. But now it's actually doing something to help. So I'm sore, but I'm alive. And it was a solid weekend. Like I said, $20,000, excuse me, raised towards ValorFit. So I don't usually pump that very much, but I think it's a worthwhile thing to say now.
If somebody wanted to help, what would they have to do?
Go to valorfit.org. They can either donate, or if they know someone that is in a situation where they think they need their strength back, they can either nominate or apply or contact. Troy Peterson is the guy on that. You can just email him online or just ask for more information through valorfit.org. So if you do want to have donate or you know somebody that you feel like could benefit from the program, valorfit.org is the place to go.
Cool. All right, so like you mentioned, it has been a month since we've done one of these podcasts. There's been some changes for Iowa State football. Most notable one, the addition of LaMichael Petway, Arkansas transfer wide receiver. I know you haven't gotten a chance to watch him a ton, but I think that you can look at his physical intangibles, 6'2", you know, good-sized guy, mm-hmm. has played a lot of college football, and look at what Iowa State had coming back in the receiving core, a lot of youth, a lot of guys that hadn't gotten to play a ton. You know, what can adding a guy like that, what's the biggest thing that he can add to the program right away?
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily like the experience part's always good. It's never a bad thing to have too many leaders or have too many guys that have played a lot of football. It's never a bad thing. But I think specifically where he plays is going to be a better thing, because you talk about the inexperience. There's a lot of inexperience, but really the inexperience is on the very, very outside, mm-hmm. is because you lose Matt Eaton, you lose Hakeem Butler, and the guys behind them were Landon Akers, who's played some but isn't quite your dynamic threat. He's a guy that's going to be in the right spot. He's just not a...
Looks like he's playing in the Little Giants.
Yeah, he's got his jersey tucked in underneath his... he got his jersey tucked in his pants or like his belly button, yeah. Like that.
But the kid who you would have been able to see in his hip pads in the past.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. He would have been the laced-up hip pads guy and then tried to tuck his jersey around the hip pads, but then during the game, one of them pops out, so he has one hip pad sticking out and the other one still in. That's, yeah, for sure. And He's not exactly Akeem Butler. Like I said, he's going to be in the right spot.
But I feel like at the same time, a defensive back goes out to cover him, and they look at him, and they're like, who is this guy?
Come on.
And then he runs right past him, and he's like, oh, man, that guy's fast.
White dude's pretty quick. But, like, yeah, I mean, outside of that, I mean, how many snaps has anybody else taken and that would have been out there? I mean, Josh Johnson was really the only guy that got any type of sort of run, and that was like 20 snaps in the entire year.
And now he transferred.
Yeah, and so what are you going to do? I mean, what do you have at that position? So you don't have a lot of experience outside. You have in your slot guys between Milton and Jones and then your tight ends that you can flex around a bunch of places. You have plenty of reps between your tight ends and your inside receivers. Your running backs, your guys like Kinney and your guys like Johnny Lang that you can flex anywhere. You have a lot of interior guys, but there's not a lot of people that can play that outside more man-to-man, big X receiver, Z receiver position.
Right.
And so getting a big body that's experienced at that spot, that was it's a huge get because there is, security blankets are one thing for a quarterback. And I think most of the security blankets are going to be in your tight ends. But in certain sets and certain looks, you need to have a security blanket outside. And so if he can even marginally fill what that role was, and Hakeem Butler, obviously, you're not going to get another Hakeem Butler. I mean, maybe, but that dude's a freak talent. But if you can get him
to be... He's the best receiver to ever play at Iowa State.
Yeah. I don't think that's really that hard to argue.
Yeah.
And so you're not going to get him. But if you can get somebody that's even remotely productive that can play something like that position, then you open up the offense a lot more and you take everything away from the middle, like that clustered up middle kind of junk defense that somebody would play.
I think that the thing for me is that it would allow guys like DeShonta and Tariq to play more natural positions. Mm-hmm. Where so, they're not, you don't have to put them on the outside just because it's like, okay, we have to put somebody that we feel like we has played there before.
Right, and I think DeShonta, of the two of them, I think DeShonta is probably more fit to play that outside position. He's a bigger body. I mean, he's older. He's a little bit stronger. So he can fight more because your slot corners, or not your slot, your slot guys, they're more off the ball. So they're much less likely to be in press coverage. So that's why they're going to be good hand fighters. Like, think Julian Edelman. Julian Edelman's a quick little bastard, and he's a great hand fighter. He's a great route runner, but he's very rarely going to be pressed on the ball. He's going to be using his quickness, and his fight's going to be at the top of his stem. And so your bigger, stronger guys need to be able, from a standstill, to just hand fight right now. And so I would think DeShonta's probably between the two of them, if they're going to be, a three wide receiver set. Tariq is probably, I would guess, going to be your true slot guy. DeShonta would be your Z receiver, which is the one that's kind of like a tweener, where he's sort of an outside receiver but can play towards the middle and is going to be doing some other stuff. But then your X receiver is your Hakeem Butler. It's that guy that is your Randy Moss, your Brandon Marshall, your big physical FU, I'm going to be in one-on-one with a corner guy. And so they didn't have that until they got this transfer.
How much better would you feel just knowing that you have a guy like that when it comes to like run blocking than it is if you have to throw Joseph Skates or Sean Shaw or somebody who hasn't really had to play that position at this level much?
I would say good, but I don't know him much. Because wide receiver blocking, it's less about like physically dominating somebody. And we've been really spoiled with blocking between Hakeem, DeShonta, and Allen, as far as the guys that you think of as kind of your top receiver. Those dudes are bulldogs. Absolute just kick-ass bulldogs when it comes to blocking.
Eaton was pretty good at it, too.
Yeah, Eaton was really good, too. So, four guys that you can think of just off the top of your head in the past few years that are just absolute bulldogs. And so that comes with – it's different because you're blocking in so much space. When you're blocking a linebacker, when you're blocking a defensive end, you have to have a physical strength. And obviously, your technique is hugely important anywhere. But your technique when you're run blocking, your success and failure is going to be – success is 6 inches and failure is another 2 inches off. And success in – run blocking, if you're a wide receiver down the field, is success is 2 feet and failure is another foot because you have so much space to work with. A corner's not going to run right through your chest to try and get somewhere. He's going to try and run around you. And so it's more an attitude of just like, I'm going to stay on you and in between where the ball is supposed to be and where you are. And so the big body thing, I think rather than him being a big body, I think if he has that experience level of knowing how much work it takes to do that, because that is energy expensive. Blocking down the field is energy expensive. I mean, think of what it's a lot like is being in true man-to-man in basketball, and you've got ball at the top of, like, and you're picking up the ball at half court, and you got to stay with him the entire time. That's the kind of energy expense that it takes to block in when you're playing wide receiver. And so the maturity of understanding what kind of work that takes during a game, that's really big. But I obviously don't know him, because some receivers can get away with not putting that super full effort if they're good at other stuff, because, you know, coaches are going to say, like, oh, you have to block. But, you know, if you're a really good pass catcher and you can be in the right spot, a lot of times you can just get away with not blocking. So I don't know if he's got that same type of, like, bulldog attitude that DeJounte and Allen and those guys had. If he does, that's fantastic, because that position is what takes a Charlie Kolar catches a little drag across the middle. Charlie Kolar's not going to outrun the entire defense. But if he catches a ball at 12 yards and your X receiver is blocking that corner, he can take 12 and turn it into 35 because that corner is occupied.
Yeah.
If that corner is not occupied, that dude is going to run Charlie Kolar down, going to take 12 and turn it into 20. Well, that 20-yard gain is now at the 12-yard line, and that's the hardest place to score, from the 12-yard line in. So that takes those big plays, those nice plays, and turns them into huge plays when your X receiver, your outside guy, is taking away those corners.
I think the way I look at it is, it's like, you hear how much about it is mentality. Mm-hmm. Just it's really just making a decision of, like, I'm going to do this. I know I have to do this.
Right.
And with those young guys, it seems like a lot of times when they get to college, they're so used to where in high school, it's like, I catch the football.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. And they don't realize quite yet that it's like, if you want to catch the football, you got to be prepared to block for the football too.
Right.
You know,
I mean, what's a good receiving number for a receiver in the Big 12 in total receptions in a game? 7?
Yeah, I mean, that'd be...
If you have 7, how many offensive snaps do Big 12 teams play?
A lot.
80 a game?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, even if you rotate in and out and you play 50% of the snaps, that's 40. And you're on the field and you catch 7 passes, and that's a good day. 33 other snaps that you're on the field, your ass is blocking.
Mm-hmm.
So that attitude, you're talking about like an attitude change I didn't have as running back. It's, you're going to hand me the ball and I'm going to run. Roger that. I'm not going to do anything else. I don't need to. So I never practiced it. Didn't do it. And then I think I've told the story before of getting lifted in the air by Fred Guerin. And you're like, oh, that's what this is like. This is different. I should probably practice.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
you can't, like, crack block the same way that you used to be able to, can you?
No. That's definitely illegal.
Okay, yeah.
That's definitely illegal, which is good. Because
that was always fun back in the day, though.
As an offensive guy, I admittedly, there are a few calls that are so biased towards the offense. One is targeting, where the amount of ridiculously dirty plays that tight ends, wide receivers, running backs that we're going to enact on a nickel or a slot guy or an outside linebacker, there's so many times where those should be targeting calls. Absolutely so many times. And then there's the Anyuazirike where a quarterback is getting tackled and his face mask kisses the logo on the side of the guy's helmet and he gets targeted.
Yeah.
That's one. And two, I've never understood it. And again, when I was playing, I love this rule. Why in the world, if I'm an offensive player, can I touch your face and you can't even look at mine?
Yeah.
Like the face mask penalties, like there's the incidental face mask, there's that whatever. How can I grab your face mask and it not be a penalty and a defensive guy just glances it and it's a 15-yard foul?
That's one thing I've never understood about, like, when guys stiff arm people.
And it's right in their face.
Yeah, they'll put it right on their face and it's like,
that's so unfair.
That seems like that's a penalty.
It's so unfair. But I love that we can do it. It's so much fun to do that. I think that's one of my favorite experiences. If you are carrying the ball, when it's like the feeling that plays back in my head when I watch film of either me or somebody doing that is, shh. Like, as someone's trying to tackle you, and you put your hand in their face and, like, push them to the ground. Sleep. Is it legal? Yes. Why is it legal? I have no idea.
Yeah, I figured you couldn't do those. Like, man, I remember, like, back in the day when it was like they'd put the tight end in motion or something.
Oh, in motion,
yeah.
And like the linebacker knows coming.
Yeah, but even then, it's like if the cornerback doesn't call for it, like he doesn't talk loud enough, then he's going to sleep. Like,
yeah.
And he really might go to sleep. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's why that they changed that rule to not being able to do that. But again, there's one of those things where like safety of the game has to take precedence over the fun of the game.
Yeah.
There where targeting again, like if we're talking about targeting crackbacks, like I don't like seeing that more as much as the next guy, but also if the game doesn't get made safer in some capacity as we go forward, people are just going to not play. Mm-hmm. More and more people are just going to like not let their kids play if they just see, you know, Ryan Shazier get crackbacked and freaking break his spine. Like I'm not going to put my kid in that if that's not starting to get out of the game.
Yeah.
Which is tough, but
shout out to Ryan Shazier though. Back on his feet.
Dancing at his wedding.
Running, dancing at his wedding. Man, that guy was a hell of a player.
That's a tough SOB.
Too bad that he won't ever probably play football again.
I hope he does not.
Yeah, but man, there was a lot of reasons for that guy to give up on trying to get back on his feet, and he just did it anyway.
He's a tough dude.
Yeah, tough guy for sure. All right, do you want to talk about Iowa State's defense before a break or after a break?
We'll go after.
All right, we'll be right back. Football and Random Things on the Cyclone Fanatic Podcast Network. Welcome back to the podcast, Carl Chevrolet Studios in Ankeny. So Iowa State Athlon put out its magazine last week. We talked about this a lot on Stands and Fits last week, but I want to ask you a question. Number one defensive line in the Big 12. Number one linebackers in the Big 12. Number three defensive backs, according to Athlon. Could this be the best defense in the history of Iowa State football?
Let's not put the cart in front of the horse.
I'm just asking. I think that that's a legitimate question to ask. They could go into the season as the best defense in the Big 12.
They could, but in the very same breath, because of the rules of college football versus the rules of the NFL, really good defenses can be sabotaged by average to poor offenses, because especially in this conference, because the basketball metaphor of talking about like guarding somebody when you're playing point or when you're defending the point, you're defending the ball, that much energy expense. Imagine having to do that every single time, all the time. And then you go down on offense and you offensive end of the floor and you're shooting the ball with, what's a 40 second shot clock in college?
It's 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Okay. Shoot the ball 21 seconds left in the shot clock every single possession. And you come back and you have to play point defense again. Like there's a certain point where that fatigue, no matter how
that's
good
just
of a
stupid
defense
coaching, what kind of idiots doing that? What kind of idiots running that system?
And then no rotations at all. But if
playing Grinnell on steroids here,
except they're actually trying on defense.
Yeah,
Grinnell. Do they even send five guys back, or do they just cherry pick one?
No, they basically press, and then once you beat the press, they just let you go. More or less. And then they shoot with like within 10 seconds, 15 seconds
that's
every
the most
time.
Absurd defensive and offensive strategy.
Hey, they led the nation in scoring a bunch of times. They hung banners in their gym for it.
Yeah. I would assume it's really fun to watch, but it's also like shocking.
It really isn't, actually. It really isn't very fun to watch.
Really?
It's kind of frustrating. We're just like, man, this is really bad. This is not basketball.
It's the complete opposite end of the spectrum. We're like, oh, Wisconsin basketball, 47-40.
Yeah. Well, it's like where both teams – basically, if both teams don't score over 100 points, it's because the other team was really bad.
Oh, I want that coach.
I mean, that's how you have a guy that scores whatever it was, like 135 points like that kid did.
Yeah, because he just stands in the corner. And just someone's going to throw him down a ball.
Well, or they just throw him the ball every single time, and he's going to shoot it as fast as he possibly can. He took like 50 shots in that game.
Still impressive.
Is it?
I couldn't do it.
Yeah, well, yeah, I know that.
My game is suspect.
Shocker.
But anyway, defensively, the defense I think has the potential from a personnel standpoint because of the depth that they have at each level mm-hmm. to be really, really good. And so they can withstand a lot I don't want to say ineptitude because I don't think this offense is going to be inept at all. That's a really mean term. But if this offense is not good or great, which the offensive line is going to determine whether they are average or good or great. Because last year, I would say they were an average offense.
Yeah.
And if they are average to good or better, then the defense is going to be fantastic because of the way they're set up. But if the offense has trouble, and we've seen this in years past, and again, I don't think many times Campbell has done a much better job than I think the Rhodes administration did when they were there, is if the offense is going three and out on, say, three or four straight possessions, the defense is going to start getting fatigued, and then those fatigue spots are going to end up showing. So,
man, I can remember some situations when they would come out on first down, they'd run the ball for 2 yards, maybe, or one, or a loss of two, mm-hmm. and then they would drop back and throw a 5-yard hitch to Alan Lazard, and then they would throw an incompletion. And it would, and the whole possession would take 40 seconds.
Yep. And the defense just had like a super hard fought, like they're playing like Baylor or something like that. And like Baylor's just going up and down the field.
Right.
And they have this hard fought stop and it's within 7 points. And you're like, all right, here's where it turns. And the offense goes, yeah.
Or run, incomplete pass, run, incomplete pass, and throwing out of bounds pass.
And you're like, what in the hell is happening?
It's like, or a screen pass to the outside, gain of three. Run up the middle, loss of two.
Sack.
And sack. Or what would it be? It'd be like third and nine, throw to the outside for 7.
Oh, the Kirk Ferentz offense. But I think –
they'd hand it to you, and then that just would – that basically was just a waste of 3 downs.
those are few and far between if I got the ball outside of 3 yards a game. That was so not fun. If we could predict from the sidelines the call of what it was going to be, I would assume the other team could predict from the sidelines what the call was going to be.
Yeah.
Which, again, is not the best way to go about running an offense. But that is neither here nor there. We're talking about the defense.
You really missed your window because you could have been really good at that F position.
Yeah, I know. I said I would have loved this being on this staff. Because they are square peg, square hole guys. We're like, my personnel or my body type was not that of a true tailback.
I want the F end around with Jeff Woody. Put him like at the wing back spot.
Give me a little shovel pass?
Yeah.
What can I do with a shovel pass in a little bit of space?
I don't think you got the hands for it.
Oh, you get yourself out of here right now. You get yourself out of here. With the staff, it'd been super fun because they would have, like, it could have been a position of, like, we're seeing Buckner play, but I feel like I have better ball skills and route after the ball. He's much better blocker, but something like that where you can just move around and do something. But we're on the – I keep trying to bring this back to the defense, and you keep trying to derail.
Sorry, my bad.
But because of the depth they have at defensive line, the depth they have at linebacker, they can withstand some average to slightly below average offensive production because you're not going to have to play every single down with Ray Lima. You have Jamal Johnson that can cycle in and be not that big of a drop-off where their twos are allowed to do that. So if you do get in a position where it's stop, three and out, stop, three and out, and you have to get back on the field, they've still got bodies that are relatively fresh because they have, 72 linebackers that are going to be able to play. So I think that they have the capacity to be really good. Excuse me. And Haycock will be creative enough that, you know, for spurts last year, they were probably one of the most aggressive defenses from a blitzing standpoint. And then there were spurts last year where they were one of the most passive defenses at the standpoint. So depending on the personnel and the opponent, they're going to be put in really good positions. So, yes, this does have the chance to be one of the best defenses that Iowa State has seen, but it also depends on what is done on the offensive side. And the other part of this is – so Haycock and Campbell have constantly been changing. They've constantly been tweaking what they do. And so there's going to be some type of tweak that they do. Again, no, it's adapt or die. And – are they going to stay ahead of the Big 12 longer? Like, are they going to keep staying ahead of the Big 12? Because at a certain point, like last year, we saw it when Annie went down, the Matt Leo side defensive end. And again, Leo, that dude is a statue. Like, he is a – if you wanted to design a football player physically, you design that guy. He's a freak. But he didn't quite know last year exactly where to be, so he'd rush too far up the field or he'd get too – you know, he'd collapse too far inside. And so every big play went at him. And so they found a weakness, and the – 10 other dudes in the field were being really, really, were doing their job really, really well, but they found that one weakness, and they were just giving up 30 points a game for a 3 or 4 game stretch. So let's not anoint everything just yet, because we don't know exactly what type of weakness is going to be found by these Big 12 offenses. But from an on-paper standpoint, the defensive line changes everything for what this defense can be. And having guys like Mike Rose and Orion Vance and Jake Hummel have another year of being actually counted on defense to play. The front seven is going to be really, really good, has the potential to be one of the best Iowa State defenses, but again, there's so much, and I'm not saying to knock your expectations down, but I'm saying for those fans that are like, we're going to be the, you know, best defense in the Big 12. Like, there's the potential to be. Let's not say that it's going to happen, because you don't want to get – there's a lot of things that can happen in football. Expect good and accept excellent, rather than expecting excellent and then being disappointed with good.
I just expect them to be basically the steel curtain.
The Orange Crush for people eaters.
Yeah.
Everything. They're the best defense to ever exist.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you see the dodgeball game yesterday?
Yes.
Was it this weekend or whatever it was?
Yeah, I think it was yesterday.
I would have given my right arm to be able to play that game. Like, play in a game like that.
I would be pissed to end up on the team opposite Brock Purdy.
See, I don't even know if Brock Purdy would be like, I mean, yeah, he's got an arm, but how many other dudes played quarterback? Or how many other dudes played baseball when they were in high school?
I don't know. That man had a backwards, upside-down visor on.
Ooh, that's tough.
I don't mess with that guy.
Who's
on the...
Who's wearing the tie?
I don't know.
Somebody's wearing, like, a shirt and tie, which is a bold strategy. I'm going to guess it's a walk-on. Because only a walk-on is ballsy enough to wear a...
He showed up thinking it was like a job interview. And it's like, oh, no, we're going to play dodgeball today.
I have to be professional. I thought we were going to meet for a casual social event, networking. Now we're playing dodgeball. All right, looks like I don't have any spare change clothes. Here goes nothing.
Or at least, like, have an undershirt on. You could just take the shirt and tie off. You know, maybe fold it up and hang it over a chair.
Make sure your rec specs are in your bag. Because you don't want to show up to a dodgeball game without your rec specs.
Oh, man. I was going to say something. I can't. Oh, no, wait. I don't remember now.
Who's the guy if you're playing rec league basketball, that you want to guard less? Rec specs guy or shooting sleeve guy?
Oh, rec specs guy without an absolute. Absolutely without a doubt. Absolutely. I've thought about this a lot.
Elaborate.
If a guy walks into the rec league basketball game wearing a pair of rec specs, you know that there's two ends of the spectrum. That dude is either really, really bad, or that guy is freaking awesome because he has all the confidence in the world to show up wearing a pair of rec specs. Like, that dude walks in. That guy walks in, and you're like, and you can just look at his body and be like, that guy probably is really good. He's about to eat on me right now.
And he's going to be probably 45 years old. He's got knee sleeves on. He's going to have a wicked post move.
Here, let me put it this way. If he's got two accessories, three accessories.
Are rec specs
including
rec specs involved in the accessories?
Yeah. So if he's got the rec specs, maybe a headband, a wristband, then you're like, that dude sucks. But if he's just got the rec specs, maybe some, you know, maybe some tights.
Or some knee sleeves.
Knee sleeves, yeah. Then you're
he's got some icy, he's got an icy hot in the knees. He played about, you know, 20, 25 years of casual rec league basketball.
That guy's going to have a monster scoop shot. He probably weighs 230, 240, but he's got huge shoulders.
His positioning and rebounding is perfect.
And he's just always going to know how to knock you out of, like for me, he's going to know how to knock me back just far enough to get his little scoop shot up, and he can do it with both hands. Unblockable.
And he's going to have the pivot that he's going to have, his footwork around the rim is going to be
deceivingly quick.
If he's got rec specs, he practices on air his drop step.
Mm-hmm.
With his back to the basket from the block.
Yeah.
He practices that on air.
And he's been doing it for so long that it's just like muscle memory at this point.
Yeah, he could do it blindfolded.
Right. And make the shot.
For a shooting sleeve guy, I feel like the percentage, it's the same. The percentages are different because maybe it's shooting sleeve guy because he just has tendonitis from playing basketball so long that he just has to put Icy Hot on there and he doesn't want to have to like rub his elbow and get it in his eyes.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just covering up some, you know, some Bengay joint cream. And you don't want to get that anywhere else?
I think
or
I've seen a lot of guys.
Guy.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of guys who are okay. Like, they wear a shooting sleeve. And other ones that they just wear a shooting sleeve because they see the NBA players do it and they're just an asshole, you know? Like, they just do it because it's like, hey, this looks cool. I'm going to do this. There's really no functionality to it. It's just like, well, I just wear a sleeve.
Like I said, the functionality to me is to cover up your Asper cream.
Believe me, man, I've, like, very seriously considered getting a pair of rec specs on multiple occasions.
Do it.
I wouldn't get rec specs, though. I would get, like, the Amari Stoudemire Oakleys.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. When I shot free throws, put them on top of my head. Like, pick them up, put them up like this.
And then you have to be able to wipe them off, though.
Yeah.
At some point. And you have a sweaty jersey. So you have to have, like, a towel guy.
Go to the top. Yeah. It's like I stand off the lane on free throws, and I just walk to the back and have my guy toss me my towel, wipe off my glasses.
That would power rankings, are they the number one accessory of guy who's secretly good at basketball? Rec specs, or is it knee sleeves?
No, knee sleeves. I mean, I wear tights, and that's basically the same as knee sleeves. I look at a guy with knee sleeves, I don't think anything of it.
Or is the thick off-arm sweatband?
If it's
a thick off-arm sweatband to wipe your shooting hand off.
Yeah, if you walk in with like the Karl Malone sweatband, I'm like, man, this guy means business, you know? Like, and then he'll maybe do one of these every once in a while.
The pat in
the forehead with it. Yeah.
Above the rec specs, so you don't get the rec specs dribble underneath the glasses.
Oh no! If you got the rec specs and the wristband, then no.
No, the combination doesn't exist.
Yeah.
You can't be sweaty and also have bad vision.
Well, you can, but at that point, if that guy walks in, I'm gonna be like, if he's really good, then I would just be absolutely shocked, you know. The other thing that's really funny is it's like if a guy walks in and he has the wrong jersey, like everybody else has a coordinated jersey and he doesn't have one, you know that he's either really bad or he's really good. And if he's really good, it's like they don't care that he doesn't have the right jersey, or it's like his jersey's not even the right color. They're just like, hey, we're just happy that he showed up.
All right, Mark is here.
Yeah. Like at this point, we're just like, we just want you to be here because he might show up once every three games.
And you're unlucky enough to have that. Be the guy that you're playing.
Yeah.
That one week that he actually does show up.
And he'll almost always bring his like 3-year-old son, and his 3-year-old son will, without a doubt, be standing on the side, bouncing a ball, and it will dribble onto the court at least 3 times during the game.
And you want to say something, but kids being kids.
He'll get progressively angrier throughout, like every time the ball goes on the floor.
Kids being kids. And you want to say something, but you know he's already mad about it. Right. He's not going to do anything. He can't control his kid over there from a distance.
So everybody's got to get a hoop in, you know? I feel it. I understand. Kid wants to get a hoop in too. All right. So with Iowa State, back now when you think about this defense, you're talking about how good the defensive line could be. Mm-hmm. How could that help the offensive line? Going against them every single day, could that – I mean, obviously they won't do it as much during the season, but in the fall camp where like a guy like Colin Newell – he knows that he's got to go against Jamal Johnson, Julian Good-Jones, even Trevor Downing. Like when those guys are working in, mm-hmm. they know that they're going up against some guys that are absolute monsters in the Big 12. Mm-hmm. How can that help them elevate their game a little bit?
Well, I think it's really good for them.
If you were them, wouldn't you be wanting to get into the facility like during the off season, like during? Like when they get back on campus next week and it's like, man, we're going to work out with these guys as a group and just try and really do some stuff like just head on head a little.
Like, well, I don't think that's ever bad, but it's really just – it's hard to do without pads.
Yeah.
And there are certain
points. But even working footwork or
something
like
that. Yeah, and they probably will.
Yeah.
The footwork on air on bags is just as good as footwork against a person when that person doesn't have pads on.
Okay.
Because when you go to grab – like. The practice jerseys, so there's holding on every play. And so I mean that because you're going to punch their
chest.
Believe
me, I've watched the Iowa Hawkeyes before.
as much of a solid trash talk line as that is, that's not exclusive to them. Kansas State does it way worse. But if you're going to get underneath.
Chris Klieman will clean that up.
Nope. Going to be the same. But like you're going to grab their jersey on their chest plate. And so when you go against, you know, obviously you want to keep your head out of it. You're not going to head like slam against them, so even with helmets, whatever. But when you're going to try and block on air, it's hard to do like that offense defense stuff. Mm-hmm. Because you go to punch and you're going to grab their chest plate. Well, imagine wearing a shirt like I wear a large t-shirt. Imagine wearing if I was wearing a 2XL shirt, that how much play that's going to have, that they're going to slide off a block. So your footwork's going to change because that person's going to move from where you thought they were. So there's not really a lot of stuff that you can do like one-on-one against each other. But once you do get to fall camp, the understanding of little things like positioning, Rex Beck's guy, like why is Rex Beck's guy good at basketball when he can do a drop step? It's because he's not more athletic than you. He's not better, you know, he's not a significantly better athlete. He's probably a worse athlete. But the little things that he's going to get your shoulder, he's going to get your edge, and he's going to pop a scoop shot there. And so if you're going to do the same thing on the offensive line, is you've got to get your shoulder to a 1-inch extra advantage that you have with your thumb placement or your hand placement, how much your arm's locked out. That kind of stuff is really hard to simulate unless you're going against a live, really good opponent. Mm-hmm. And so that type of stuff during fall camp is going to be really advantageous when they do go out against someone else. I think the other thing that this fall camp is going to be really good for this young offensive line is Haycock did start a trend, like not necessarily just exclusively the three down, but and Todd Orlando is the other, is another guy that's starting that trend in the Big 12. Well, Todd Orlando is just a really aggressive version of John Haycock, but from 1 week to the next, you're going to get maybe 60% of what you know and 40% of a total crapshoot. And so you have to be able to adapt and communicate on the fly with something you've never seen before. The days of, all right, like, and to bring up Iowa again, the days of, like, when you play Iowa, at least when we did, I don't know, I haven't really paid attention to him that much since we left, but like when we played Iowa, Norm Parker was their defensive coordinator. I could predict probably if we were in 70 plays in any context, if you just show me the down and distance situation, I could predict probably within 8 out of 10 on any given play what they were going to run, because you just could expect it so easily. But that's changed now. And so with this offensive line, you may not know what front you're getting, and you may be preparing for something. And you're preparing for a three down, and you're preparing for their you know, maybe it's a 290-pound three technique that in a three down look, which normally is a defensive end, he's normally a little bit quicker, but they put a bigger guy in there because they like to, you know, run stall and get a linebacker to scrape over top of it. Well, all of a sudden, they switch to a four down look. That guy's now playing nose, and they have a outside linebacker that moved to play defensive end. That's a totally different feel. That is entirely different. But if you've practiced in communicating, because this in practice in fall camp and during spring ball, you've seen, I mean, shoot, when I only went to one practice, but knowing what I know about the staff, I'm sure they've played four down with a linebacker outside, three down with a linebacker outside. They've played three, you know, a balanced three, everything. And so you've communicated and played against good players in weird fronts, that the adjustments that are going to happen can happen way faster, and they can be communicated way better because they've just done it more. So I do think that going up against a really good defense is going to help the offensive line on a significant level, but it's also the time to take advantage of that is spring ball, and then once you actually start able to hit each other, because that's a position, it's just really hard to practice live without getting full pads, full gear, get your work in like that. It's too hard to practice that way, but the communication, the understanding, I mean, hopefully they've played enough together and they've kind of got a decent idea of what the offensive line is going to be. So those five guys can work, practice, communicate together for at least a few months before they kind of dive into the season.
Cool. You got anything else to add?
No, I don't. We're entering the fun part of football season. June.
Okay.
That's a joke.
Talk to you guys later. Everybody have a good short week. Jeff, guess I'll talk to you again some other time.
Yeah, next couple months.
All right. Peace.